disease starts as a sore throat in children and ends with open heart surgery, heart failure, stroke, and premature death?
If we had a similar outbreak of measles or meningitis or even Ebola around the world, that would make the headlines in the news, whilst this is not something that the general public is aware of.
This is an excerpt from the documentary Take Heart, released earlier this year to raise awareness about rheumatic heart disease. You just heard that RHD has some pretty devastating outcomes, like heart disease and stroke. But to better understand rheumatic heart disease, you need to understand rheumatic fever first. People get rheumatic fever following an infection caused by Group A streptococcal bacteria. You may have heard the term strep throat before. Put simply, if you have a throat infection and it doesn't get treated, it can lead to rheumatic fever. In trying to fight this strep bacterium, your body mounts an immune attack. This results in inflammation in other parts of the body, such as the joints, the brain, and the heart. If you keep getting these throat infections and your body keeps mounting these immune responses, the repeated inflammation can damage the heart permanently. This is rheumatic heart disease. And it means your heart valves struggle to open and shut properly to pump blood around your body, leading to those devastating outcomes you heard earlier. Children are most at risk of developing rheumatic fever, and by extension, rheumatic heart disease. It's found almost exclusively in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander populations in northern and central Australia, and it is 100% preventable.
So rheumatic heart disease had been eliminated from most of Australia in the 1990s. Because it's traditionally been a disease which is found amongst people with coming from lower socioeconomic incomes, those who are disadvantaged.
This is Professor Liz Sullivan, Assistant Deputy Vice-Chancellor of Research at the University of Technology, Sydney.
And a Professor of Public Health.
The main reason why this disease is so prevalent among Aboriginal populations is because of overcrowded housing. What in particular is it about overcrowding that makes this disease more prevalent?
It historically has been a disease of overcrowding of housing, and housing is a symptom of poverty, and you have a lot of people in a house. So I suppose then that means it's much more difficult to maintain adequate cleanliness. There's a lot more physical contact. There's closer living. So if someone's infected with something, they're much more likely to be infected with it when you have close housing living. There also reflects too, there may be poor nutritional status in that household because there's not enough money for food. Also issues around heating and around good quality water and sanitation. So all those sorts of things, unfortunately, are what are related to infection spread.
Add into the mix poor access to medical services and you begin to understand how a child can have a repeated untreated throat infection. Beyond treating the symptoms of overcrowding and poverty and treating the original throat infection, the only other option for people who have had rheumatic fever is preventative antibiotics like penicillin.
Well, for young people who've had rheumatic fever, there is a way to prevent progression to RHD, and it can be prevented through something we call secondary prophylaxis. And that's where someone who's been exposed and has a risk of developing rheumatic heart disease goes on a regimen of 3 to 4 weekly injections of a drug called benzathine penicillin G, which we call bicillin. And you're looking at about 10 years of monthly injections.
In case you missed it, that's an injection of bicillin every 3 to 4 weeks for 10 years. But what Professor Sullivan has recently been looking at is the effect rheumatic heart disease has on pregnant women. During pregnancy, the heart has to increase its workload by between 30 and 50%. And as you can probably guess, the risks for mum and bub are grave.
So women with RHD tend to have inferior outcomes for their babies in terms of a lot more preterm birth. And for women who might be on anticoagulation therapy, there are much higher rates of stillbirth and also neonatal death. So that's the worst types of outcomes. And it particularly can affect their heart. So they may also have, during pregnancy, heart failure, and that may restrict their ability to do things and result in hospitalisations.
The research into rheumatic heart disease and pregnancy is the first in Australia, and data analysis is ongoing. Professor Sullivan says preliminary findings suggest that women have issues accessing culturally appropriate antenatal care.
So we had a study where we followed women's journeys during pregnancy with rheumatic heart disease. And what that showed was, for these women who were Aboriginal, that there was a lot of structural issues. There seemed to be a lot of... they perceived racism in the way that they were treated. There was a lot of issues around just really basic things. You know, appointment scheduling, being able to physically get to appointments, coming from rural remote settings and being able to get to the hospital, organising their medication. So lots of things which really relate to health literacy around how you navigate the system successfully to get the health outcomes you need.
However, Professor Sullivan does point out that there is a silver lining. Despite all these complications, birth outcomes are generally good because we do have a robust health system.
In Australia, we're very lucky because we have a really good health system in terms of that it's a safe place to give birth. So even when you have complicated chronic diseases like rheumatic heart disease, our outcomes on the whole are good.
As this research is ongoing, we'll keep you updated on the results as they are published.